Welcome. Hola. Bienvenidos. Bonjour et bienvenue to the Social Network Show. Welcome to the only worldwide show dedicated to social networking and social media. We give you actionable information to make your social networking the best it can be for business to business, business to consumer, and for folks who just like to post. And now, broadcasting from the studios of the Hank Greenspoon School of Journalism and Media Studies of UNLV, the University of Nevada, Las Vegas, the host of the Social Network Show, Jim Nico, and Dr. Jane Kawaski.
Welcome to the Social Network Show. This is your host, Dr. J, and Jim Nico is with me this morning. We are very happy for you to join us today as we have an fascinating guest. It is my pleasure to introduce you today to Anna Kavanaugh, the founder and director of the Anna Kavanaugh Charitable Foundation. She has established a division of that foundation dedicated to cyber abuse, which is known as the Bully Battleground. Anna is a writer, editor, speaker, radio show host, and an advocate for several humanitarian and environmental causes. You can follow the Bully Battleground on Twitter at Bully Battleground, G-R-N-D, Bully Battle, G-R-N-D. The mission, core values, and focus areas of the foundation's work stem from Anna's own life and are the driving force behind her passionate determination to bring help to victims of cyber abuse and bring about social, political, and legislative change. A primary goal is suicide prevention for other cyber victims desperately seeking relief through empowerment and emotional repair, together with a wide array of other strategies. And she uses those in her work to help victims reclaim their lives. Her personal journey has provided her with an intuitive sense for the needed support and services, and her initiative includes improving the lives of others right now while advocating social and legislative changes. The landing page of her website, thebullybattleground.org, states simply, "No one has the right to abuse the internet to abuse you. No one has the right to rewrite who you are." Welcome to the Social Network Show, Anna.
Thank you so much for having me.
And Jim Nico is here also.
Thank you for coming on the show, and we admire your work, and we are so grateful for you to be here to help promote your work and work with you to help people be safer online.
And Anna, I understand that you yourself have been the victim of a long-term, brutal, even continuing cyber abuse campaign, but you are now using your experience to help others by not only raising awareness, but also lobbying for change in legislation to better deal with online abuse. To start us off, could you tell us about what you're finding in your research in working with other victims of online abuse and what your foundation is doing?
Sure. We're working very hard, and I won't lie about it. It is a long, painful, uphill battle, and there's no sugarcoating that. As you mentioned, our primary goal is suicide intervention and providing a place for online victims to find a safety net. And speaking from my own personal experience, which I won't get too much into, but it began over 2 years ago. And at that time, there was nothing out there. There was really no one really for me to call, no one who really seemed to understand the profound depth of damage that cyber abuse creates. And legal or police recourse was very challenging for me, and it has been for so many others, because officials didn't yet, and still really don't to a large degree, understand what we're dealing with is really a new form of crime. Mm-hmm. So I created my foundation to be that place for others that wasn't there for me, offering a sanctuary to victims while also working to raise awareness and educate not only the public, but also our lawmakers. So we're helping victims reclaim their lives, deal with and remove defamatory content online, to counsel them and care for their psychological well-being, and to really empower them. And we have several ways in which we're doing that. And then on the awareness side, my foundation has put out already two public service shorts and a presentation I was asked to do by a fabulous organization called Friend Our World. So we're doing a lot, and what we're finding in case after case is an incredible commonality between victims and in the pathology of cyber abusers. There is nothing unique or special or clever about these individuals who spend their time trying to hurt and humiliate others online, and that's been really surprising to learn. This is really a sickness or pandemic disease, and it's very prevalent, and the steps of escalation is very predictable.
That is a fascinating aspect, and one of the things that first attracted me to your website was that you deal with that more than anyone else I've seen, and we'll be getting into some specifics about that in the second segment. And generally, what I would like to ask you first, if you don't mind, is that we see online abuse referred so often to cyberbullying, but you seem to avoid that term, and instead you refer to cyber abuse. Why is that? Is there a difference?
I think there's a very big difference between not only the two terms, but the interpretation and response to the two terms, and that is very key. First of all, I use the term cyber abuse because it really is a better descript of what is happening to victims online. It is not just bullying. Cyber abuse is an umbrella term that covers several offenses like cyber stalking, harassment, defamation, psychological terrorism, false light, you know, and so on. And each of those have their own traits and are often intermingled with another. So to try and define what is happening to victims online by one term that represents only one slice of the cyber abuse pie is really dangerous because it limits our perception and understanding of what we're dealing with when we try to stick it into a box. And the other reason, just quickly, that I avoid the term bullying is one that I find to be most important, and that is, you know, most of us are very empathetic to hearing about someone being bullied, but unfortunately, in reality, there is something inherent in us that when we hear that term, we immediately assign it a level of significance or insignificance. And it taps into a childhood understanding of being pushed around on the playground and laughed at in the lunchroom, and we don't tend to take it seriously. And so we're only now beginning to understand the severity and catastrophic long-term effects that are inflicted on victims. The worst thing we can do is to minimize the victims. And the term bullying is a very minimizing term. It makes the victim feel invisible, isolated, belittled, misunderstood, and even ashamed. And so that's why I avoid that. You know, cyber abuse is a crime that hasn't yet really been defined adequately, but it is very much a virtual violent crime, and it is a pandemic in this country.
I am so glad that we're going to get into some of the finer distinctions there in terms of what all this can involve. And, you know, another word I think is applicable, too, is cyber assault, because that, when I read about what has happened to you. Jane Hitchcock, for example, is another person who's really taken the initiative after a cyber attack upon her. And one of the first ones in the history of modern communications, Kathy Sierra, was a computer expert and a technology person herself, but she was harassed to a great degree, to where she basically lost her livelihood. So there's lots of fallout from this, and you're right. It's not something that is just a little social problem between kids, and they'll work it out. Or sticks and stones, you know, may hurt and break my bones, but words are not going to hurt me. No, words actually do hurt. And you created a presentation recently outlining cyber abuse and its damages at prezi.com. That's prezi.com. Wonderful format. And your presentation is called Cyber Abuse, the Virtual Violent Crime. Right. That is a strong statement. And can you tell us more about your thoughts on how something that is in the virtual realm can actually also be violent?
Well, cyber abuse kills. It's killing people every day, whether we hear about it in the news or we don't. And it's killing people of all ages and both genders. And the cyber abusers who are causing these deaths by their inhumane and profoundly cruel behavior in assassinating their victim as publicly as possible online are out for the win, and that is ultimate destruction, however that is defined. So even if the end result, even if it is not victim suicide, cyber abuse destroys lives, relationships, careers, livelihoods, hopes, dreams, reputations, and it alters the way a victim interacts with the world around them and their view of people and themselves. It robs a victim's life of self-esteem, sense of identity, joy, and basic trust in the world and civilization that they thought they once understood. It reconditions a person. But one of the things that I always say is that if the severe, debilitating trauma and emotional wounds inflicted on victims of cyber abuse would bleed like gunshot or stabbing mm-hmm. wounds, for example, we would all understand that cyber abuse is indeed a violent crime, and cyber abusers are criminals intent on murder. And I know that is a strong statement, but it's true, and it's evident in their behavior. And the effects of cyber abuse are, they're violent and they're real.
Let me address that for a second, Anna. Jim Nico here. One of the things that, brought together a very powerful group with us, and we'll talk about this more later, but Amanda Todd, who is arguably one of the most famous younger people, girls who committed suicide after years of, as Sandy Garasino, who does a series on the Social Network show, said, she talked about different sexual extortion, even, you know, in other words. So Amanda Todd was a very, very sterling example of what you just described. And as we go yeah. forward here, I think that we're going to see many different inroads on how what you're saying is so timely and in the world at large needs to hear you.
And you'll be joining Anna Kavanaugh in considering the pathology of the online perpetrator of cyber abuse.
Questions? Comments? Email us at questions@thesocialnetworkshow.com. We'll be right back.
Kelly Keller, an intellectual property attorney specializing in internet law and social media issues. Join me on The Kelly Keller Show right here on the Social Network Station. Together with my guests, we will tackle tough legal problems presented by the ever-increasing use of social media in everyday business. Through dynamic conversations, we will discuss your rights and responsibilities in the new media world, so the hard work you have put into developing your brand, business, and products does not go to waste. How does the law's response to the social media explosion affect you? Join me on The Kelly Keller Show to learn more.
Now, back to The Social Network Show.
You're back with Jim and Dr. J and Anna Kavanaugh on The Social Network Show. Now, Anna, in our previous segment, had just started getting into the idea of what characterizes an online abuser. And Anna, I'd like to ask you about that in terms of, you call it a pathology, and I think you're absolutely right. What types of abuses does the online abuser tend toward? And is there a profile of the cyber abuser?
Well, you know, there's a really interesting theory that there is a cruelty gene that behaves like a drug in our brains, much like endorphins, and millions of us have this theoretical gene. Mm-hmm. And the difference is that, for example, myself and millions of others have never felt the need, no matter how upset or outraged about something or someone we are, to go onto Twitter, either as oneself or anonymously, to berate, humiliate, ridicule, and psychologically terrorize someone because of a general dislike or disagreement. But then there are millions of people who do feel the need to do that and can't seem to stop themselves or exercise any degree of self-control. It's almost like they have this profound inner need to purge hatred. And the internet gives them a platform in which they believe themselves anonymous to vent their vitriol with no consequence. So the cruelty gene idea is a pretty interesting theory. But in talking about a profile, I have found there really is no typical profile of a cyber abuser. And that is very frightening. Cyber abusers are people you see every day and interact with who you would never believe could be capable of so much cruelty. And that's why these individuals often act anonymously, because they are keenly aware what they're doing is illegal and inhumane. And they would be just embarrassed if others knew what they were doing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and you can see it in their absolute glee and arrogance in the behavior that they exhibit. It's like anonymous exhibitionism. But these people can be kids, teens, teachers, soccer moms, professionals, faithful churchgoers. And in fact, you'll often see them proclaiming some kind of righteousness in what they're doing. Or they can just be drug addicts, criminals, or just plain mean people. So while there is no real consistent profile of a cyber abuser, there is a consistent pathology in their behavior. They are not unique, and they all exhibit almost a diabolical display of virtually dismembering their victim. And that's very harsh imagery, I know, but that is what they're doing and what is most frightening.
Do you think that there's any kind of parallel here when you're describing the idea of just venting vitriol, which is how I tend to express it also, that when no one is looking, in a sense? I mean, obviously they want a lot of people to be looking, but not at them or to know who they are. And it makes me think of looting, you know, when there's no sense of accountability, that law and order has broken down. So amazingly, a large number of people will turn to looting, to theft, to destruction, to vandalism, when normally, you know, you wouldn't see them doing it.
Well, it's the ultimate sense of power. Online, they can be omnipotent, and they can make the rules. They can be the judge and the jury. They can be God and pass judgment over whoever they want to. And these people are masters of psychological torment and terrorism, and also social engineering, where they will often manipulate the social mobbing of their victim. So it would be wonderful if there was a profile to identify who is a cyber abuser, like a stamp on their forehead. That would be great, but that's just not the case. And that is what is really making things difficult in terms of law enforcement. As well.
Anna, Jim Nico here. Having a clinical background for 20-some years in dealing with diagnosis, et cetera, what you do seem to be describing, however, in some cases may be the sociopath or the psychopath in the past. And why I say that is because you in your work, which I'm beginning to study, and what you've said here, What is the sociopath about? The sociopath is about, one, winning, and two,
and two,
there's no conscience. But what most people have not integrated into their thinking, and it's almost the horrifying thought that it's true, is what I believe it's Martha Stout in The Sociopath Next Door points out, professor from Harvard, is that 1 in 25 people are a sociopath, and they're not like us. They want to win at any cost, and they have no conscience. So if they want to win the attention of anyone online or destroy someone, I think the sociopath mentality can play in.
Yeah, and the internet allows them to disconnect from reality and to not be accountable for their actions, and they dehumanize and de-individualize their victim. I think it's exactly what you're saying there, and the internet has been the next evolution for those types of individuals.
Is there a difference between the young perpetrator and the adult online abuser?
You know, equally yes and no. There is little difference seen between adult cyber abusers and adolescents, the primary difference being that adults will revert to adolescent behavior in which the full impact or consequences of their actions are not recognized. But adults are also more devious and cunning in plotting how to do the most harm to their victim's life as a whole, and so will typically strive to destroy their victim's livelihoods and professional interests. We'll see adult cyber abusers engaging in much more premeditated plotting, whereas teenagers, particularly in groups, they'll do their fair share of plotting, but still tend to be more reckless in their delivery of abuse, and we also tend to see more of the pack mentality with them. And then when we deal with very small children, because social media is so accessible to them at such a young age, the cruelty that might occur on the playground can translate into the virtual world. It's just not as sophisticated. But to the psyche of a young child victim, it creates lifelong damage that is, you know, done to their inner selves and their growth process. And those ramifications can be just catastrophic. So, you know, the answer to that question is yes and no. There are similarities and there are differences.
But the victim could be quite a bit more vulnerable. And it is a fact of life that for among the young, without adult supervision, bullying does tend to crop up. And whether it's control of the id or, you know, the darker sides of personality need to be shaped and controlled through socialization. And there's less socialization the younger people are. So without proper supervision of online activity, bullying is and crime, violent crime, as you say, is almost inevitable.
Well, and regardless of age group as well, no matter what age group, we're seeing the same type of terroristic psychological warfare tactics, regardless of sophistication. And it is always the same, to systematically wear down the victim, eroding their spirit and their soul. And the style of abuse is always, always the same. It is barbaric, it is arrogant, it is self-righteous, and it usually always escalates as the cyber abuser feeds on the high that the cruelty they are inflicting provides them.
One thing, Anna, question. I think that one of the things that is very brilliant about your approach, and I see the level of expertise, is that I like the way you are changing the terminology, what you've said about cyberbullying and that old, in our genes, not in our genes, but in our past, many people realize that it can be a phase, you can get through it. But this is so amplified, what you're describing, cyber abuse. I think that by changing the name and drawing attention to the criminal nature of it, It is what you are doing is really setting a new level and platform. Sandy Garasino, who comes on our show, also talked about in the Amanda Todd's case, when she finally committed suicide after years of cyber abuse, she also mentioned sexual extortion. So I think that you're pioneers that way. You're creating a new language and a new field. Thank you for that.
If we don't, we're not going to be able to get a handle on this. And all I would add to that is that cyber abusers aim to kill, whether that is a conscious or an unconscious thought or a figurative or literal result. So cyber abuse is very much a virtual violent crime. And until we begin to understand this and change the dialogue and the way we're talking about this, we're not going to be able to effectively save lives. So thank you for what you're saying there.
Do you think, Anna, that having this different perspective is helpful to the victim? Will that empower them to understand the motivation?
I think when we can educate victims about, when we can talk to them about motivations of the cyber abusers, we can help them begin to understand them. You know, this is going to sound ridiculous, but there was that old Brady Bunch episode where Marcia had to learn to drive and was very nervous, and Mike's advice to her was to picture the driving instructor in their underwear. As ridiculous as that sounds, that same sort of idea applies here when we work to empower victims. Cyber abusers pride themselves on the masks they wear. But what we're finding as we're dealing with case after case is that even if we don't know their name, we can still see who they are. And by seeing who they are, who that boogeyman is, they become a whole lot less frightening. And a victim can better categorize internally where to put the pain and the damage they are sustaining and to begin the road to healing and recovery. It's not easy, it's not simple, but it's a start in helping victims to stop their emotional free fall and gain their foothold and hang on. And hanging on sometimes is all we can hope for.
Well, it sounds like a lesson from Professor Snape there in the ridiculous, to wave your wand and make them appear ridiculous. We're going to be getting in now to how online assaults can further affect the victim, the target. And I think that you're calling this as it is, that just not minimizing the perpetrator's goals and so forth will be empowering to a victim, because it the two things work together, realizing just how vicious they are and yet creating some kind of image of them that is going to decriminalize them, in a sense, make them ridiculous. That is an excellent idea. So in our next segment, we'll be going into just further insight on how this damages the victim, so we cannot minimize the damage that it does also.
Want to be a guest on The Social Network Show? Email us at guest@thesocialnetworkshow.com. We'll be right back.
Today in school, I learned a lot. In chemistry, I learned that no one likes me. In biology, I learned that I'm fat and stupid. In English, I learned that I'm disgusting. And in gym, I learned that I'm pathetic and a joke. The only thing I didn't learn in school today is why no one ever helps.
Kids witness bullying every day. They want to help, but they don't know how. Teach them how to stop bullying and be more than a bystander at stopbullying.gov. A message from the Ad Council.
Now, back to The Social Network Show.
Welcome back to The Social Network Show, where we are discussing damage to victims of cyber abuse with Anna Cavanaugh. And Anna, we know that the tendency still seems to be to blame the victim in the sense of saying, well, just turn off the computer or unfriend the person or block the abuser. But you don't think that's effective. Why not?
Well, first and foremost, let's remember, and I meant to say this at the end of the last segment, cyber abusers don't aim to hurt, and people seem to not understand that. They don't aim to hurt. They aim to destroy. And that's a very significant difference. But the idea of, oh, just shut off the computer, or, you know, assigning some kind of blame almost to the victim, that is a very damaging message to send victims of cyber abuse. They're suffering enough without being made to feel they're somehow stupid because they can't figure out how to block somebody. And, you know, let's think that through for a minute. If someone is harassing or abusing a victim on social media, of course the victim is going to block or unfriend them. They're not going to sit there and just let that go on and on through their feeds. So that attitude is not only condescending, but it is extremely isolating to a victim. Cyber abuse is not constrained by a friends or followers list that a victim can just delete. It is running rampant and with free rein throughout the internet 24 hours a day, whether it's being seen or not. Not looking at the abuse may spare some temporary emotional upset, but the physical damages, the tangible damages it is causing in a victim's life are real. So it's not a bury your head in the sand type of thing, and that's going to go away. And people are misunderstanding that when we talk about this. Society misunderstands the reach of cyber abuse. Turning off the computer or blocking offending individuals, it's just not a remedy, because what is posted online propagates throughout a 24-hour virtual civilization, and it causes continual damage to a victim's reputation, their livelihood, their relationships, and more. And victims cannot retreat into a safe place. And that is why we're finding that victims of cyber abuse are actually suffering more than victims who are experiencing abuse in the physical realm. Because with virtual, that there's no safe place in which to retreat. And that is how we get to suicide, because that is
there is no let up. It's relentless, and there's no relief. And I'm glad that you mentioned the physical realm, because so many times we hear the virtual compared to the real world, and yet the virtual world is very much real. So physical, face-to-face world, and I think a lot of people don't understand the cause and effect crossover between those two worlds. So what can you be so specific on what some of the tangible damages that victims suffer are, you know, as a result of a virtual assault?
Loss, nothing but loss at every turn and on every level. Effects can be the loss of job, loss of relationships, reputation, livelihood, potential business. Loss, sort of exclusion from participating in social groups, loss of privacy, loss of health, a crisis of faith, loss of trust, sense of security and safety, loss of self-esteem and sense of identity, overwhelming, debilitating feelings of despair, helplessness, and hopelessness, and the inability to enjoy life. And the list just goes on and on. And then physical ramifications, just to name some: panic attacks, very common, night terrors, loss of appetite, insomnia, of course, depression, anxiety. We're seeing drug and alcohol use, and then, of course, you know, suicidal thoughts and often attempts of suicide. And post-traumatic stress disorder is highly, highly diagnosed among victims of cyber abuse as well. So, you know, it alters a victim's life to debilitating levels, and in some cases, the damages the victim sustains are irreversible and non-recoverable.
Hmm. Well, when it comes to it reaches the point of suicide.
Yeah.
How widespread is that, and is it limited to young people, to the children we hear about?
No, it's not. It's young kids, teenagers, young adults, and middle-aged adults, and even older. We see and hear about the cases of youth on TV because it catches the attention of the media more than adult cases do, and because there is enormous public sympathy for our children, of course, and their safety. And with adult victims, they will often fulfill suicide, and no one will necessarily know why. Mm. You know, you have to remember that being the victim of a cyber abuse campaign is a humiliating, demoralizing, and degrading experience. And it affects the victim and their families and their friends. And with adults, there is sometimes such a degree of shame, they will keep what is happening to them private, if at all possible, to protect their loved ones. And this sadly just leads to an even more isolating experience. And in terms of statistics, we can't really know because the true numbers are obscured by suicides that go unattributed to cyber abuse. Mm-hmm. But what we do know is that people are dying as more and more people in all age groups are falling victim to cyber abuse campaigns. And we need our lawmakers to stop it, and we need them to stop it now.
Yeah, it isn't some kind of other dimension where this is what amazes me is that why do people feel that there is no real law and order to be had in the cyber realm, or that policing, you know, one of our issues that we're going to discuss is policing of the internet, and to some people that's just, oh my gosh, you know.
Big problem.
Well, would you like to live somewhere where there is no law enforcement in your face-to-face physical world? It's not a happy spot. We've talked about bystanders just briefly. So do you think that, what role do you think they are playing and what responsibility do you think they have?
Well, you know, the bystanders don't want to hear it, of course. but you know, I personally believe that, you know, we all have a responsibility, don't we, online, to protect others from this type of abuse and to stand up against, you know, gross injustice and cruelty when we see it. Silence is not the answer to a victim of cyber abuse. Silence is a sentence, and it essentially condones the abuser. The silence of bystanders only compounds the damage in victims, leading them to feel all the more isolated, helpless, and disoriented. You know, what if it were you? What if it were someone you love? You know, now I don't want to bash the bystanders because there are reasons that they don't speak up. They don't want to get involved. They've seen the vicious assault that is taking place on others, and they fear that if they were to speak up, they're going to be retaliated against. If they take some kind of stand. So that's understandable. But the fact is that bystanding condones the abuse, and it sends a jarring message to the victim that they don't matter, that no one will help them. And I always use the imagery of just imagine being assaulted on the street, and there are hundreds of people there with you who just turn their eyes away and keep walking. And that is what online bystanding does to the victims who are suffering.
Anna, there's Jim Nico here. There was a scenario, part of the scenario preceding the tragic suicide of Amanda Todd, was that when she moved school, she was her mom was getting her into another school. The cyber stalker, the person that was after her that wanted to win and was sending pornographic images out, et cetera, literally went to the school that she was going to go to, imitated a young boy that was going to be enrolling in the school. This is all done on social networks. It was all virtual. And when Amanda got to the school, this person then sent pictures and amassed the whole school against her before she even got there. So it really shows that relentless desire to win of what you're pointing out. And thank you very much for this. Super important that the goal is to kill. That is important. Yeah. That is so that because it's different when you think that the goal is to just harm. If the public in general hear this show and they hear that you have put this in sharp relief, that you've made this crystal clear, if they know that the person that's abusing them, cyber abusing them, is not just trying to harass them or bother them or annoy them, they're trying to kill them. Then maybe the public will wake up. And if the public wakes up, maybe we can wake up the politicians. I mean, look, don't get me wrong. We're doing this 24 hours a day. This is all we do now. But I think it's a beginning.
What do you think is the best response for a bystander who is a bystander of cyber abuse? It would seem like they'd have to respond electronically. I mean, if they know the person, they could go over and talk with them personally. But What kind of response can be offered online?
I think a bystander, as we're saying, I think that they can do a lot of things. Number one, they can reach out to the victim if there's a means to message them or something like that, or if they should know them, or even if they don't know them, and say, you know, I don't agree with this, and I'm so sorry, and I can only imagine how much pain this must be causing you, and you know, if you need an ear, I'm here, and I don't support this. The other thing they can do is not hang around and watch. And in my case, that's certainly what is a huge part of it. And you know, I'm not an isolated case in that regard at all. People just stand around and they watch instead mm-hmm. of, you know, no, I'm going to leave that chat room. I'm going to leave that Facebook page. I'm not going to participate in that. They can also let the cyber abuser know, hey, I'm not going to stand for that. And then, of course, the obvious remedies like report them.
Mm-hmm.
And if you see, you know, somebody in trouble, don't be afraid to call up your police department and say, this is what I'm witnessing. What can I do? What, you know, just do something.
Right.
Don't do nothing.
Right.
You know?
Law enforcement is something a lot of people don't think about because, again, the idea that this is not the real world. But, yes, it's definitely a real world. And we'll talk more in the next segment about legislation and what can be done, what hasn't worked, why it's been so hard, etc. And so we'll look forward to getting back with you right after this brief break.
Hear archived shows at thesocialnetworkshow.com. Follow us on Twitter at Social Net Show or TSN Station. The Social Network Show will be right back.
Today in school, I learned a lot. In chemistry, I learned that no one likes me. In biology, I learned that I'm fat and stupid. In English, I learned that I'm disgusting. And in gym, I learned that I'm pathetic and a joke. The only thing I didn't learn in school today is why no one ever helps.
Kids witness bullying every day. They want to help, but they don't know how. Teach them how to stop bullying and be more than a bystander at stopbullying.gov. A message from the Ad Council.
Now, back to the Social Network Show.
Jim Nico here with Dr. J and Anna Cavanaugh, and we are talking about the dangers online for adults and children in the fight for safety. The Social Network Show is devoted to helping people be safe online and off, but we are 24 hours a day working on online safety for everyone. So, Anna, welcome back with Dr. J. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Before we get into our next subject of legislation and why this has been so puzzling and law enforcement and so forth, I wanted to mention, you talked about the possibility of genetic factors. And a friend of mine, Barbara Oakley, has written Evil Genes: Why Rome Fell, Hitler Rose, Enron Failed, and My Sister Stole My Mother's Boyfriend. And she is a fascinating person, started out as an engineer and is a professor at Oakland University. So it is an interesting connection there. And another connection that we were discussing during the break was that we have what I like to call is a concurrent reality with the online world. It is also, to me, as an additional sense that the newer generations, younger generations, and all of us, as far as we're involved in electronic communication and life, is a kind of a concurrent reality, and we can see this now. And you mentioned, Anna, that it was like another civilization, and that made me think of your documentary film where you're comparing the genetically modified organisms and foods as changing human life. Isn't it interesting that we've got this convergent of two different big changes happening to the human race right now? We've got this involvement in an electronic world and also changes to our genetic material.
Anna, do you see, in light of what Jane said, do you see, in a very simple way, the difference between, let's say, an acoustic guitar, which if there was an acoustic guitar playing in the room that you're in right now, whoever's listening, you listen to an acoustic guitar and the volume may reach to the next room, the next bedroom, the next office or whatever. But if you add a Marshall amplifier, an electric guitar, that amplifies the message and the sound and the effect, it's what, 100-fold? I mean, in other words, now you're reaching a stadium a mile away. So isn't that what's going on? Do you see it that way? As like cyberbullying used to be on a playground, but cyber abuse is the amplified version online. Is that, am I anywhere near your thinking there?
That's interesting. I've never really thought of it that way, but I was just going to say, you know, we're plugged in.
Oh, okay.
We're not unplugged. Yeah.
We are plugged in, huh? Okay.
I see what you're saying, and I would totally agree. I think, you know, what cyberspace does, you know, amplify is a really good word because it mutes everything that is, that we go about our lives with certain laws and, codes of behavior as we walk around every day. But when we turn on our computers, there's none of those boundaries exist. And they all just sort of fade away to the sides. And then you're just kind of left with this silence. And within that silence, you can be much louder. Mm. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So I think that's my way of agreeing with everything you just said, yeah.
Well, why is it so difficult, or has it been so difficult for online victims to get help from the physical world, the law enforcement agencies, or to pursue litigation? I mean, you know, you'd think at first, well, these things obviously shouldn't be allowed, but what's exactly the problem?
Well, it's a challenge because while there are state laws, there is no federal regulation. And cyber abuse, as I've been saying, is a new form of virtual crime that until just very recently, we did not understand how big a pandemic it has become. And we're still trying to figure that out, and everybody's trying to catch up to that. And what makes it more complex is that it is a worldwide problem within a global internet, which makes issues of governance extremely difficult. So, you know, the way we get to change, sadly enough, is that legal precedents have to be set.
Mm-hmm.
And that often means that a whole lot of victims go without justice before we get there.
Right.
Again, you know, this is a form of crime that has not yet been clearly defined. And that is what I'm trying to do in my work. If we're not going to talk about it for what it is, how can we possibly address it? But things are changing. Police and the FBI are making more and more arrests, taking this more and more seriously. You know, harassment and cyberstalking, they're not legal activities. Many police departments now have a cybercrime division, and despite what most cyber abusers still believe, nobody is anonymous online, even if they're running through proxy servers, cell phones, or other covert mediums to hide their identity. So this is good news, but here again, change is very slow coming. And then, just quickly, the same is true with attorneys. More and more precedent-setting lawsuits are being filed and won, so there is legal recourse for victims. But the problem with that is that the victim suffers again because the cost involved in pursuing litigation is incredibly expensive, and for most people, prohibitively so, which sort of leaves victims feeling out of luck and denied justice if they can't foot the enormous bill involved in taking these cases to trial. But then on the flip side again, we go back and forth here, there's some good news because more and more attorneys are taking these cases on a contingency basis as we're seeing more of these cases being litigated successfully. So we're changing. We're getting there. It's just slow.
It is a tremendous transition time in our society and worldwide, too. Trying to adjust to this whole new sense that we have and how to act with it, how to apply accepted standards. These are standards that are accepted in the face-to-face world. So it isn't like we have to develop a whole new standard of behavior. It's already there. It's just a question of getting, like you say, the mechanics of the precedent cases and so on to apply. Now, I'm not sure about the international aspect of it. Do you see, are there international bodies that hold out some promise as far as enforcing the accepted standards of civilized society online?
Well, the global community, first of all, you know, has to come together and recognize that this is exactly that. It's a global problem, and we're going to have to work together in solving it. But already around the world, we are seeing, you know, common laws spring up. And in fact, in the UK and Asian countries, for example, there are some really stiff consequences to this kind of online behavior. You cannot get away with it. And Canada is really, really becoming very strict, and lots of consequences are being dealt out. So as of now, frankly, other countries are doing better at managing this than we are. But every country is going to have to define how they are going to deal with assigning consequences to their own citizens within their own legal system. But we're also, as a global world, going to have to recognize the need to do that and again realize that Internet use needs to come along with responsible behavior, a code of conduct. You know, there just aren't any easy answers. But at some point, we're going to have to stand up and say, you know, hey, this isn't right. Mm-hmm. You know, this isn't working. And too many people are dying.
One thing that's very interesting, we're aware of you talk about the changes in Canada, for example. Sandy Garasino does a series on the Social Network show, former Crown prosecutor there, and there are some strides being made. One thing, though, that we have emphasized and we'd like to get your input on, even if we do it on the next show, we hope to continue with you, is the idea that I introduced a metaphor that those that own the playground are in charge of the playground. And so what I'm hoping is that the social networks themselves take some responsibility for what children, at least, and maybe even adults, see as an online playground. In other words, the whole question of anonymity, being able to go in and not use your real name, et cetera. And this opens up a whole world. But please, we hope you come back with us and continue in Dr. J.
Well, in closing, Anna, what message would you like to send victims who are suffering right now from cyber abuse, whose lives and emotional selves are in danger of being destroyed?
That even though it doesn't feel like it, there is help and there is hope. I would tell them to reach out, to enlist the help of others. This is very, very important. Sometimes when we are reeling emotionally and psychologically, we neglect to focus on things that are really important. And it is vital to document the online abuse meticulously.
On the bullybattleground.org, have a forum, a private forum that is specifically designed to help connect people with others who are going through the same thing or can give them support, and that bullies or trolls or criminals are not allowed to interfere there. And we we promote the same sort of thing on the social network station .com blog also.
But I cannot stress enough to victims that even if it's too painful for you to do, get your friends, your family, whoever to help you. The documentation is vital. Contact the police, even if you think that they can't help you. Contact an attorney for a consultation. See a trauma counselor. Do whatever you can to survive in the face of what feels insurvivable. And most of all, don't surrender your spirit. You know, fight for your joy. Don't let anybody rewrite who you are. And let others, my charitable foundation is one, help you do that. And, you know, you can contact us online. We have a crisis intervention system set up, particularly for suicide intervention. You have to fight for your life as others are fighting to end it.
What is the specific website where you have that suicide intervention?
www.theannakavanaughfoundation.org.
And that is Kavanaugh with a K, correct?
Yes, with a K. Okay. And then you can also get reference to it through the Bully Battleground website, which is, I think you mentioned before, www.thebullybattleground.org.
And what should cyber abusers, the perpetrators, those who inflict this kind of public pain on and humiliation on others, what should they take away from this?
I would tell them, just stop. You do not have the right to abuse the internet, to publicly abuse others, to maliciously and intentionally try to destroy someone's life or career, or to hurt them so much and so relentlessly they are driven to suicide. No matter how much you hate, despise, dislike, or disagree with someone, nobody deserves the public raping of their dignity. Nobody. And if you have a problem or legitimate grievance with somebody, we have laws in this country, and we have methods of dealing with those types of things. Not going to a vigilante society and taking the law into our own hands and passing, you know, sentence and playing judge and jury. Just stop, because you're killing people.
And what about the lawmakers? What would you like to tell our lawmakers?
If this is going to change, it's going to be up to you. It's going to be up to all of us, but it's ultimately going to be up to you in what you put on the books. If we're going to save lives, we need your help, and we need it right now. And I would just simply ask, you know, how many more victims of online abuse have to die before they make it a priority to define and affect meaningful change? We need you to act now.
Thank you so much, Anna. That's been Anna Kavanaugh of the Anna Kavanaugh Charitable Foundation, a warrior in the battle against cyber assault, cyber abuse, and cyber predation.
Anna, thank you for coming on the Social Network Show, and we hope you return, and we want to work with you long-term in order to affect social justice. Thank you.
Wonderful. Thanks so much for having me.
You've been listening to The Social Network Show, the only worldwide show dedicated to social networking and social media, coming to you from the studios of the Hank Greenspan School of Journalism and Media Studies of UNLV, the University of Nevada, Las Vegas. Listen to archived shows and follow us on Twitter. The views expressed on The Social Network Show are those of the hosts and guests, and may not be the views of Social Network Intermedia. The Social Network Show is produced by Social Network Intermedia, copyright 2012.